Okay, let's unpack this. You put time, effort, maybe money, into a program, a class, or some kind of experience, say, learning a new skill or building knowledge in a complex area.
Right.
And afterwards, you want to know, how much did you actually change? How much did you really learn?
Yeah, that's the key question. And the most common way to figure that out, the standard go-to, is that classic before and after, the pretest post-test.
Right. You measure something beforehand, you run the intervention, the class, whatever it
And
is.
then you measure it again afterward. Look at the difference.
Yeah.
It seems logical, right? You need that baseline.
It absolutely does seem logic. You need a baseline to see how far you've moved. But here's where our sources today raise a really, really interesting question about that standard approach. What if asking someone before they've learned something actually gives you a less accurate picture of where they started compared to asking them to reflect back on their starting point after they've finished?
Okay, that's the core idea we're really digging into today. We're exploring a tool built around that concept. It's called the retrospective pretest.
Retrospective pretest. You might also hear it called the post-then pre, or maybe the then-aptus.
Exactly, those terms pop up too.
So we've got a stack of studies and papers here that dig into how it works, why some research suggests it can actually be a better measure of change than the traditional pretest.
And crucially, where its own potential pitfalls might lie. Because, nothing's perfect.
Right. So our mission today is really to help you navigate this landscape of measuring change, especially using self-report. We want you to understand the strengths, the weaknesses of this alternative retrospective approach, all based on the insights from the sources we've looked at.
Sounds good. Let's start by really nailing down the problem the retrospective pretest is trying to solve. What's the issue with the conventional way?
Let's do it. So the standard approach, pretest, intervention, post-test, look at the difference. Where does it run into trouble, according to these papers?
Well, the major issue, the one that comes up again and again in several sources, is something called response shift bias.
Response shift bias. Okay, break that down for us. What is that?
Think about it like this. When you go through an intervention, maybe a training program or an educational course, something that increases your knowledge or changes your perspective, your understanding of the topic itself changes. And because of that, your internal standard, the way you measure your own ability or knowledge in that area, it actually shifts.
So let's see if I get this. On the pretest, I might rate myself, say, a 5 out of 10 on understanding X, honestly believing that's where I am.
Right, based on what you know then.
But after the program, I've learned so much more about X, its complexities, and suddenly I realize, wow, what I thought was a 5 back then, looking back now with my new understanding, that was probably more like a 2.
Exactly, that's the core idea. Your initial rating wasn't necessarily wrong from your perspective at the time, but that perspective wasn't fully informed. Once you've gained that deeper understanding, you can look back and assess your starting point more accurately relative to your new higher level.
It feels a bit counterintuitive, but the sources give some really powerful examples of how this actually plays out. I mean, one paper mentions studies, like a classic one from Howard and colleagues back in
Oh,
79,
yeah, I know that one.
where training was supposed to decrease something like dogmatism. But the conventional pretest post-test actually showed higher levels of dogmatism afterward.
Which is the exact opposite of what they wanted. And the conclusion wasn't that the program failed, but that participants became more aware of their own dogmatic thinking because of the training. Their understanding of dogmatism and their self-perception shifted.
So they didn't actually become more dogmatic, they just got better at recognizing how dogmatic they already were.
Precisely. And other examples cited show similar things, like an assertiveness training program found no significant gains with conventional pre-post tests, but they did find significant gains when they used a retrospective measure. Same kind of story with a study on educational psychology students. Conventional showed nothing significant. Retrospective showed clear gains.
Wow. So the big takeaway here is that the conventional pretest, because people might initially and honestly overestimate their knowledge or skill,
Because they lack that informed perspective.
it might consistently underestimate the true effect of a program. It doesn't fully capture that journey from being less aware to more aware.
That's the fundamental problem, yes. And that's the problem retrospective pretest is designed to tackle.
Okay, so let's get into the alternative. How does the retrospective pretest actually work? Walk us through the process.
Conceptually, it's actually pretty simple. You administer the test or the survey only once.
Only once, so no measurement beforehand at all.
Correct. You wait until the intervention, the program, the class, whatever it is complete. Then you give them the survey.
Okay.
On that same survey, you ask them two things. First, rate yourself now on whatever skill or knowledge you're measuring. That's the POSTUS part.
Got it.
And then immediately after, maybe on the next page or the next set of questions, you ask them to reflect back. Think about how you were before this program began and rate yourself as you were there using the same scale.
Ah, okay. So both ratings, the now and the before, are done after the learning, anchored by their current and presumably more informed understanding.
Exactly. They're using their new, clearer perspective to look back and assess their initial state.
The idea being that with that better grasp of the subject matter gained during the program, they can give a more accurate assessment of where they started relative to where they ended up. It's about getting a better fix on the distance traveled.
Precisely. It's aiming for a more accurate assessment of change from the participant's informed viewpoint.
And looking at the sources, this method isn't like brand new or obscure. It seems it's been used quite a bit in fields like program evaluation, quality of life research, even organizational change studies.
Yeah, especially when getting traditional pretest data is difficult or just wasn't done for practical reasons. And now, as we see, it's showing up more in educational research, too.
So let's look at the evidence. What did these sources find when they actually compared the methods or looked closely at the retrospective approach? You mentioned the Coulter study from 2012.
Yes. Coulter's study is interesting because it's a direct comparison in an open admissions college setting.
And what was the big takeaway there?
Well, the students who used the retrospective pretest reported a significantly greater amount of change in their knowledge compared to the group that did the traditional pretest post-test.
How much greater?
We're talking a big difference. The average change score for the retrospective group was more than double the change score for the conventional group, like 25 points versus about 11 or 12. And get this, the retrospective method detected a significant change on all 17 items they measured, the conventional method. Only on 5 of them.
Okay, that is a striking difference in sensitivity. It really suggests the retrospective method was much better, in that context anyway, at actually detecting the change that students experience. It provided useful, as the study called it, indirect evidence of learning.
It really highlights how much potential change the conventional method might be missing because of that initial, maybe inflated pretest score due to lack of perspective.
Mm.
Then there's another really fascinating study, Moore and Tanninus from 2009. They were working with gifted high school students in an international studies program.
Okay, what happened there?
They initially noticed this disconnect. Their conventional survey results, the pre-post scores, just weren't matching up with what students were saying in open-ended comments or what teachers were observing in class activities. The numbers weren't telling the story.
That's a classic evaluation headache, isn't it? When the quantitative and qualitative data don't align.
Exactly. So they decided to switch gears and try the retrospective pretest. And the pattern they found was incredibly consistent and telling.
What was the pattern?
Students rated their retrospective pretest scores, their estimate of where they were before, made after the program, significantly lower than the scores they had actually given themselves on the initial pretest at the very beginning.
Ah, okay. So initial pretest score is high-ish, then they do the program, then they do the post-test, which is high, and they rate their before state again, retrospectively. And that retrospective before score is lower than their original before score.
Precisely. And their post-test scores were significantly higher than both the initial pretest and the retrospective pretest. It perfectly fits that response shift model. They thought they knew more initially, but after learning, they looked back and realized, actually, my starting point was lower than I thought.
That really supports the idea. Did they have anything else to back that up?
They did. Their qualitative data was key. They included this great quote from a student that just nails it. I really thought I knew a lot, but when I got here, I found out just how little I really did know.
Wow. Yeah, that kind of self-awareness really only comes after the experience deepens your understanding.
Absolutely. And Moore and Tanninus also noted something else interesting, a trend toward increased reliability in the retrospective pretest scores compared to the conventional pretest scores.
Meaning the retrospective ratings were more consistent.
It suggests that, yeah, once students had that more informed perspective after the program, their ratings, both post and retrospective pre, were maybe more stable or consistent.
Okay, and the little et al. Paper from 2019, that provides more backup.
It does, particularly in academic and STEM settings. They also found that initial pretest scores were considerably higher than the retrospective pretest scores participants gave later. Confirms that potential for initial overestimation again. But here's a really key insight from Little and colleagues. They looked at the difference between the retrospective pretest score and the initial pretest score. They called this response adjustment. Basically, how much did people adjust their before score downwards after the program?
Okay. And what did they find about that adjustment?
They found that this response adjustment score was actually a better predictor of the final post-test score than the initial pretest score itself was.
Wait, hang on. So the amount someone realized they didn't know as much as they initially thought, that adjustment, was a better indicator of how much they actually knew at the end than their original starting score.
That's what their beta suggested in those studies.
Yeah.
It implies that the retrospective score, or maybe the process of reflecting retrospectively, captured something really important about the participants' evolving understanding, or perhaps a bias in the initial data that the original pretest score just missed.
That's fascinating. It suggests the shift in perception is really meaningful.
It does. And just to round this out, the Klatt and Taylor-Powell synthesis piece also mentions other research, citing folks like Pohl and Howard again, indicating that retrospective pretest scores sometimes correlate more highly with objective measures like actual knowledge tests or observed behaviors than conventional pretest scores do.
Which, again, lends support to the idea that the retrospective rating might, in some cases, be a more accurate reflection of the actual initial state, at least relative to where people end up.
Yeah, it builds a pretty compelling case for considering it.
Okay, so there's definitely a solid argument here. The retrospective pretest seems like it can be more sensitive. It can potentially correct for that underestimation caused by response shift. But there's always a but, isn't there?
Almost always in research.
It's not a perfect fix, right?
Yeah.
As one paper, Hill and Betts put it, maybe using the retrospective pretest is just trading one set of biases for another.
That's exactly the caution they raise, and it's a really important counterpoint.
Yeah.
While the retrospective method might mitigate that response shift bias we talked about,
mm-hmm.
it introduces its own set of potential issues. Helen Betts actually found evidence suggesting that retrospective pretests could introduce greater bias than traditional pretests, at least under certain circumstances.
Greater bias? How did they see that playing out in their research?
Well, they studied a parenting program, and they did observe the expected pattern. Parents' retrospective pretest scores, rating themselves before the program, were lower than their initial pretest scores. That fits the response shift idea.
Okay, so far so good.
But, and here's the crucial part, when they calculated the effect size, the measure of program impact, using that retrospective pre-post comparison,
yeah,
it was substantially larger than the effect sizes that had been reported from much more rigorous, controlled experimental trials of the very same parenting program.
Whoa. So it wasn't just correcting for underestimation. It looked like the retrospective method might have actually overestimated the amount of change, inflated the program's effect.
That was their interpretation, yes. The retrospective measure seemed to be showing more change than was likely realistic, based on other strong evidence.
And did they have a theory why? What was driving that potential overestimation?
They linked it particularly to socially desirable items on the survey. These were questions about positive parenting behaviors. Things like, I give compliments to my child.
Things people generally want to say they do well.
Exactly. Parents in their study rated themselves lower retrospectively on these desirable behaviors, making their post-program selves look significantly better by comparison, but they didn't show the same pattern of adjustment for undesirable behaviors.
Ah, that's interesting. So it wasn't just a neutral recalibration of their internal standard across the board. It seemed targeted towards making themselves look better on the positive stuff.
That led Hill and Betts to argue that this might be less about a simple neutral response shift due to new understanding and more about other cognitive factors, more maybe even impression management.
Like what kind of factors?
Things like maybe an unconscious bias to see our present self as better than our past self, or effort justification. You know, I put all this time and effort into this program, so I must have changed a lot.
Right. You want to believe it was worthwhile.
Or even just having implicit theories about change. People who do this program are supposed to improve on these things, so I'll rate my past self lower to show that improvement. It moves beyond just understanding the concepts better into potentially distorting the past to align with present goals or beliefs.
That makes a ton of sense. If I just finished a really challenging course, I'm probably quite motivated, consciously or unconsciously, to see significant improvement in myself afterward.
Yeah,
it feels validating.
Exactly. So that's a major caution flag for the retrospective method, the risk of inflating perceived change. And other potential limitations get mentioned across the sources too.
Like what else?
Well, simple memory distortion is always a possibility. Can people really accurately recall their specific state of mind or skill level from weeks or months ago? Memory isn't perfect.
Yep.
There's also acquiescence bias, the general tendency some people have to just agree with statements. That could potentially inflate post-test scores or maybe perceptions of change, though, as we noted, it doesn't easily explain why retrospective pre-test scores would go down.
Right. And Hill and Betts really emphasize those emotional effects and cognitive distortions as being distinct from just a neutral response shift.
Yes, they really highlight that the motivation, conscious or unconscious, to adjust your past self-assessment to make your current self look better, especially after you've invested time and effort, is a key risk factor for overestimation when using the retrospective approach.
It's interesting, though, you mentioned earlier that Moore and Tananis, in their study with the gifted students, they considered social desirability.
They did.
But they felt their qualitative data, those student quotes about realizing how little they knew, argued against social desirability being the main driver for their specific results.
Right, which underscores that the context really matters. The reasons for shifts in scores might differ depending on the program, the participants, and the specific questions being asked. It's probably not always one single explanation.
And little et al. Also pointed out some limitations, right, about their study settings.
Yeah, they were careful to note that their studies were in specific academic and STEM program settings, and they weren't true experiments. So we need to be cautious about generalizing their findings too broadly without more research.
Makes sense.
They also raised the need for more research on how things like culture or age, although they did find kids as young as fourth grade, could use the method reliably in one example, and maybe literacy levels might affect how well people can use this retrospective method. It requires a certain level of reflection.
Okay, so let's try and pull all this together. It's a bit of a complex picture.
It is.
We have the conventional pretest post-test. Seems straightforward, the obvious way to do it. But it can run into trouble with response shift bias, potentially underestimating the true change because people's starting self-assessment isn't fully informed.
Right. They don't know what they don't know yet, so their baseline might be artificially high.
Then we have the alternative, the retrospective pretest. You measure everything after the program, asking people to rate now and reflect back on before. This tries to fix the response shift problem by using their new informed perspective.
And several studies show it can yield larger estimates of change, sometimes correlate better with objective measures, and maybe even predict final outcomes better than the initial pretest score did, suggesting it captures something important about that shift in understanding.
But, and it's a significant but, the retrospective method isn't foolproof either. It carries its own risks, primarily the danger of overestimating change.
Exactly, due to potential factors like social desirability, wanting to justify effort, memory issues, or those cognitive biases where we tend to view our past selves less favorably to highlight progress.
So it really does sound like maybe you are just trading one set of potential biases for another, which raises that fundamental question. Which one should you use? Is there a better method?
Well, based on these sources, it seems like there isn't a single universally best answer. It really depends on your goals, the context, and what kind of information you prioritize.
Okay, so walk me through that. When might you lean towards one over the other?
If your main goal is to get a very conservative estimate of a program's effect, maybe you need it for rigorous comparison with other programs, or you're trying to establish something as an evidence-based practice where you really want to avoid any chance of overstating impact.
Then maybe the traditional pretest post-test is safer, as Hill and Betts seem to suggest. Perhaps combined with some statistical checks for response shift, if possible.
That seems like a reasonable takeaway, yes. It might give you a lower bound estimate, even if it potentially underestimates subjective change.
But what if you're more interested in understanding the participant's own experience of change, their subjective journey?
Right, or if maybe a traditional pretest just wasn't feasible to collect for logistical reasons, or if you have very strong theoretical reasons to believe response shift bias is a major issue in your context and is masking real effects.
Then the retrospective pretest becomes a really valuable tool to consider.
Exactly. It can be much more sensitive to capturing those perceived changes, the shifts in perspective that participants themselves feel they've undergone. It might give you a better sense of the perceived impact.
So it's about choosing the tool that best fits the question you're asking, while being aware of its specific limitations.
Precisely. And ultimately, we have to remember, as the sources point out, anytime we're relying on self-report measures, there are inherent limitations. Doesn't matter if it's pre-post or retrospective pre-post.
Designing good survey questions, being really thoughtful about the constructs you're measuring, that's crucial regardless.
Absolutely. And being acutely aware of the potential biases, both the risk of underestimation via response shift in the conventional method and the risk of overestimation via social desirability or cognitive distortions in the retrospective method, that awareness is key to interpreting your results responsibly.
So the big takeaway for you listening is probably this. Next time you encounter a study or an evaluation report or even just feedback data that talks about measuring change, based on how people rate themselves.
Whether that's change in knowledge, skills, attitudes, confidence, quality of life, whatever it might be.
Take a moment. Ask yourself, how did they measure that before state? Did they use a conventional pretest done at the very beginning? Or did they use a retrospective pretest asking people to look back after the experience?
Because knowing about response shift bias on the one hand and the potential for overestimation or cognitive distortions on the other really changes how you might interpret the findings. It adds a critical layer to understanding what those numbers about change actually mean.
It definitely complicates the simple idea of just subtracting the before score from the after score.
It really does. And it leaves us with a fascinating question to chew on, doesn't it? If trying to measure the before state before the learning happens has one set of biases.
And trying to measure that same before state after the learning happens introduces a different set of biases.
How else could we get at this? How can we creatively and accurately capture the complex, often messy reality of how people genuinely change and grow as a result of an experience? That's a real challenge for anyone involved in learning, development, or evaluation.